Tucker is the film critic for New York Magazine, and from 1989, when it was founded, he was Entertainment Weekly's chief television critic and critic at large, where his writing won him two National Magazine Awards. Before that, he was the television critic at the Philadelphia Inquirer, where in 1984 he was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. He appears regularly on National Public Radio's Fresh Air with Terry Gross, as well as he's made appearances on The Today Show, Oprah, Charlie Rose, Entertainment Tonight, and The O'Reilly Factor, whose host features prominently in the title of his new book, Kissing Bill O'Reilly, Roasting Miss Piggy, 100 Things to Love and Hate About TV. It's published by St. Martin's Press and retails for $32.95 Canadian, $22.95 American. Please welcome to thecommentary.ca, Ken Tucker. Good morning, Mr. Tucker.
Good morning.
You're no longer at Entertainment Weekly, is that, am I correct to?
That's right, I'm at New York Magazine as their film critic now.
Was there something about watching TV for so long that, I mean, I'm sure you still watch TV, but I mean, being a TV critic, did that drive you into wanting to be a film critic now, or are you just sick of watching TV? Or?
No, I still watch, as you say, watch a lot of television. I still enjoy it. It was just, you know, after being at Entertainment Weekly for 15 years since it was founded, when the opportunity came up to write about a different medium, it just seemed like a different kind of challenge. But it's not as if I've abandoned watching, you know, The O.C. and The Simpsons.
Really? You were recently at Sundance, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
I did notice, though, the one thing that I noticed about Sundance that it comes into the TV realm of things. Robert Redford was on nearly every TV show. He was on Donny Deutsch's thing. He was on Chris Matthews's program. And that's the one thing that I remember about Sundance this year, is that the Redford was on nearly every single program on TV.
He really knows how to promote that thing, doesn't he?
Yeah.
This was my first one, so I have very little basis for comparison other than what I've sort of read about. But actually being there and seeing Redford striding through the snowy banks in Salt Lake City, it really is quite impressive the way he's managed to turn the small town in Utah into the place for wheeling and dealing for major and independent film companies.
I want to ask, we'll get into the book now, but this is sort of current events, is the Johnny Carson thing. And when Carson died, I was actually reading your book, and so I thought it prescient that I was near the part where you talk about The Tonight Show and why you actually hate that show. You write about Carson, that you call him dreadfully overrated. You bring up the fact that he stole bits from people like Jonathan Winters and Steve Allen. On the monologue, you say that he doled out yucks and the sort of bipartisan humor whose toothlessness was exceeded only by the gummy suck-up of a Bob Hope TV routine. Do you want to take this opportunity to change those remarks about Carson, or do you stand by them in death?
As a critic, I have to stand by them. I'm sorry that Carson died, but you know, book publishing, this thing was written close to a year ago, and I really have to stand by that judgment of The Tonight Show. To me, Steve Allen was first and best host, in the sense that he was the most adventurous. He had a real gift for both ad-libbing and making a real connection to the audience. I thought that Jack Parr, who succeeded him, was a fascinating TV personality, in that he was far more emotional and just much more revealing of himself than any other TV talk show host, whereas Carson was just the opposite. The very kind of coldness and self-control that so many people and his the hosts like David Letterman and Conan O'Brien that succeeded him admire so much, I found kind of off-putting, and really felt like Carson sort of walked through the last decade of his hosting duties. So, I mean, with all due respect to the man, I just think that I think because a whole generation grew up watching him, they forget, because nostalgia tends to do that, just how sort of mediocre he was night in, night out, with, you know, a few occasional glimpses of the old, original, impish, very, very intelligent Johnny.
that that was sort of nearly selfish, did you not?
Yeah, I think that the fact that he retired and disappeared was really the best move he could have made. You know, he showed up maybe once on David Letterman and didn't say a word. It was just a little comedy bit. And really, I thought that was much more classy than a lot of things he actually did on the show when he was hosting it.
Well, what is his fascination with records? Because I think a lot of people remember Carson and they lauded him at his passing. You know, a person on your blog made the comment that whatever you said about him, about his humor, about what you thought of The Tonight Show when he hosted it, you couldn't put down the fact that he was there for 30 years. When programs like Frasier are the most honored sitcoms in Emmy history, I guess this industry pays a lot of attention to those rather shallow things, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I don't understand the whole thing about, well, he occupied the desk for 30 years, no matter what the quality of the work was. I mean, there's so many instances in my book where I point out television shows that, you know, there was a show called Profit that I thought was Adrian Pasdar, created by John McNamara, that lasted 4 episodes on Fox and was one of the most brilliant things I'd ever seen on television. So I think the idea of somehow longevity and just sort of maintaining your employment is a kind of absurd criteria for quality.
I disagreed a bit with your assessment of Carson. I don't think it was incorrect, but I sort of liked the guy, so I was bugging you about that. But that's the thing about this book that I enjoyed, that there were things that I disagreed with, there were things that I agreed with, but it still made for a very compelling case for each of the arguments that you made. The fact that there are 100 arguments here, 50 that you like, 50 that you don't like, did that just come up because you had a bunch of notes that you wanted to put together, or did you set out to write a book that's put together like this?
What I wanted to do was sort of what you just said, was to have people bounce their opinions off mine. I really expected people to disagree with me about a lot of things. I mean, I've had my next door neighbor has threatened not to take in my mail when I go on vacation over the item about MASH and considering it very overrated. So when I was coming up with the format of the book, I knew I wanted to do these kind of short chapters, partly because people say about television generally as a medium that it's the cool medium, it's passive, the people sit in front of, they call people who watch it couch potatoes. Yet in my experience, people develop very, very strong opinions, very strong loves and hates. So I wanted those extremes. And as far as the numbers go, I wanted a nice round number. I had to stop it somewhere. I mean, I could have done 200, I could have done 275, but it really, I just thought it was a nice round number, and it kind of imposed a kind of formal discipline on me that structured the book.
One of the things that you love is C-SPAN, and so I'm going to ask a Brian Lamb question. You dedicate the book to your late mother, Ann Tucker, and you write, "Who taught me to read anything and everything and to watch TV with pleasure and skepticism." What are some of the obviously that had an impact on the line of work that you did. Well, what TV memories do you have of your mother that you're willing to share now?
Well, my mother liked, first of all, she liked to read more than she liked to watch television, so that was impressed upon me early. But her television watching was pretty scattered and diverse. She liked Steve Allen. That's where I sort of kind of keyed in on Steve Allen as a kid. But she would watch kids' shows with me and say, "Do you really think that's good? Or what do you think about that?" And it was more kind of open-ended as opposed to my father, who was much more sort of judgmental and say, "Oh, that's junk. What are you watching that junk for?" You know, and kind of stalk out of the room. Whereas my mother, and I tried to continue this with my children, did a lot of sort of watching with you and kind of guided me away, you know, put her foot down occasionally and said, "You know, that's just, I don't know why you like that Walt Disney stuff. It's so sentimental." And as a kid, I just loved Walt Disney's Wonderful World of Disney. I loved Davy Crockett and the Hardy Boys and all those kind of boys' adventure kinds of things. And now I can recognize them as the silly junk they were. But at the time, you know, they exert a kind of pull on you for fantasy purposes that you really enjoy. And I think I owe my skepticism and my sort of critical distance about TV and so many other things to my mother.
As a critic, though, do you watch, whenever you watch something, I mean, do you ever watch something for pleasure, or are you, do you have the critic, quote-unquote critic, view of things when you watch TV, even just in passing?
Well, I think everybody's a critic. I think everybody, you know, you come to TV or movie or a book with expectations of pleasure. I always want to be entertained and even greeted with a piece of well-crafted popular entertainment or even, dare I say it, art. But you're inevitably, most of the time, disappointed. And to me, one of the things is that most people can just sort of turn it off or turn the channel and say, that was junk, and walk away. I try to figure out what it is about that piece that failed. Was it the writing? Was it the acting? Was it the directing? Was it the concept? And that's more interesting to me, is to figure out why something failed.
I guess I want to ask, do you take notes when you watch TV? Because I noticed on the cover of the book, you've got two pictures of yourself. One enjoying the program, the other one not. The one enjoying the program has the notepad. Is that something that you take with you when you watch TV, even just for pleasure?
There's always, almost always, a reporter's notebook or a scrap of paper somewhere around the house near
really?
The television set. Because I'm always wanting to either write down a line or write down the name of some supporting actor that catches my eye or notice who directed a particular episode of TV. It's the kind of, that's the sort of pack rat mentality that you develop as a critic, where you know that this is going to come in handy somewhere down the line, that you can use this, and it's useful to have those. TV is such a, even though we live in the age of being able to record in all kinds of ways television shows, it's still a very transitory medium, and you always feel like you're catching something now that you'll never see again, and you really want to get it down on paper. So I found it very useful. It's a habit I developed back when I was, you know, reviewing rock concerts and music, was to constantly scribble down lyrics and moments and descriptions.
We're talking with Ken Tucker, the film critic for New York Magazine, formerly the TV critic and critic at large at Entertainment Weekly, about his new book, Kissing Bill O'Reilly, Roasting Miss Piggy, 100 Things to Love and Hate About Television, published by St. Martin's Press, $32.95 Canadian, $22.95 American. So in this list of things that you love and hate, I was surprised that you thought that you love Aaron Spelling, you consider him the most underrated TV producer ever, while you consider David E. Kelly the most overrated. What's the reaction been to a summation like that?
Well, Kelly really, you know, has his great defenders because let's face it, he ostensibly aims higher. Supposedly his, you know, creation of things like Boston Public and early work on L.A. Law and Ally McBeal were these kind of pop culture sensations. Picket Fences won a slew of Emmy Awards. To me, you know, he was a guy who trained as a lawyer and is a very smart guy, but he has this really odd way of taking arguments like a lawyer and seeing both sides of them and working them out in his shows. And so everything is kind of this sort of neutral relativism, which I find very annoying. And he also has these tics that he constantly makes fun of people who are overweight, who have any kind of physical deformity. He tries to work it in as supposedly some kind of social commentary, but what he's really doing is exploiting people. You know, in that short-lived show he had called Brotherhood of Poland, New Hampshire, one of the stars of the show had a, quote, Katie Couric fetish. He was fixated on the Today Show host and therefore couldn't have good relations with his wife. This kind of middle brow masquerading as highbrow TV I find very annoying. Whereas Aaron Spelling, on the other hand, you know, produced a lot of out-and-out schlock, like, you know, the Love Boat and Charlie's Angels, but also did things like Family, a wonderful show that explored the nuances of what family was like with Christy McNichol as the young star of that. And he supported a lot of risky TV in his time, and I thought that Spelling was very much more modest than someone like Kelly, who's really sort of a credit hog.
You love Full House, but there's no TV series that you loathe more than the Brady Bunch. And I thought that you were most vitriolic in that essay about the Brady Bunch. The line that I love, of course, is "Fuck you, Brady Bunch." What is it about that show that just confounds you about its popularity?
That its popularity is so enduring and annoying, and that it has spawned this kind of aesthetic that I really detest, which is the, oh, it's so bad, it's good. It's so schlocky, it's cool. This kind of camp sensibility that really drives me up the wall. There's a whole generation that was kind of raised in front of the Brady Bunch that knows every single episode. And somehow I know that when you're raised by something, it leaves an impression on you when you see it young and you remember episodes very vividly. I'm old enough that I was not put in front of the TV set when the Brady Bunch was in its first run, but its continuing existence in syndication, these memoirs from cast members, the movies made out of it, this was a really bad schlock TV show. Now, you mentioned Full House that I liked. I liked it because it was what it was. It was nothing more than a family sitcom that supposedly at the time ABC had this thing called TGIF. Thank God it's Friday. It was a block of four shows that you could sit in front of your set and with your kids and not be appalled by the content of it. Now, granted, there was a lot of banality in a lot of those shows, and I'm not claiming that Full House was any kind of masterpiece, but it had a kind of energy and a kind of unpretentiousness, and it didn't accrete this sort of mythology that the Brady Bunch has, that somehow it's a classic of camp I really dislike the canonization in pop culture of the Brady Bunch.
Let's get to the title now. Kissing Bill O'Reilly, Roasting Miss Piggy. You obviously don't like Miss Piggy, but you like Bill O'Reilly, and I found that fascinating. We just got Fox News in Canada, and I knew about Bill O'Reilly and his reputation previous to that, but you compare him to Arthur Godfrey, which not a lot of people remember who Arthur Godfrey is, but he was, as you say, a communicator of first rank and just a towering TV personality. He had, a radio show, a TV show. Talk to me about Bill O'Reilly, and not just the impeccable manners, but what is it about him that you like?
I like him, as I say in the book, as a TV personality. I don't like the content of what he says. As I say in the book, you know, would I be a good East Coast media critic if I agreed with anything Bill O'Reilly
right,
said? But in terms of being a communicator, that's the comparison. Arthur Godfrey was a radio and TV personality in the very early years of television that kind of very folksy, very kind of talking directly to the audience. He strummed a ukulele. And Bill O'Reilly is the more high testosterone version of Arthur Godfrey in the sense that he looks straight out at the audience. I think his show is brilliantly produced the way it has those, at the top of the show, that talking points memo where you have text running along the right side of the screen and you have to actually read along with him, which is almost unheard of for TV to ask people to read. And he's the kind of personality that he understands, he brings the audience over to his side instantly with any guest he has, so that you have to resist his pull. He's so hypnotic that you're not to be pulled over to his side, because he always equates himself as being part of the audience. It's a complete fabrication that he's this working class man of the people.
Right.
Yet he does it very, very well. At the end of his show, he'll read viewer mail, and he'll read as much negative mail as he does positive mail. It just makes him look better. So I kind of separate his politics from the personality, and I think the personality and the way that show is produced is really pretty brilliant.
What has he said about his name being in the title? Because, I mean, that must have either really bugged him but I think deep down he probably liked it.
Yeah, he hasn't said anything yet. I've heard that he wants to have me on the show. This is either a shrewd thing I've done or could be the end of the promotion of this book.
Right.
If I do appear on this show, he instantly, his producer, as soon as it was announced in the trade that there was this book coming out that was called Kissing Bill O'Reilly, the producer called immediately and said, "Where's this book? We want this. Are the galleys available?" So he's really, I mean, he's an egomaniac like so many people in television and without. And he wants to know what it says about him. So I'll be very curious to know what he thinks about it.
Ken Tucker, thanks so much for joining us today. And good luck with this book. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I do recommend that people pick it up because there's something for everyone in there, and there's things that you'll forget about TV that you used to watch, and you'll remember it either fondly or with rancor, thanks to the way that you've organized it. And hope to see you on the O'Reilly Factor, I guess in the next couple of weeks or so.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
The book is called Kissing Bill O'Reilly, Roasting Miss Piggy, 100 Things to Love and Hate About TV from St. Martin's Press, $32.95 Canadian.